Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Andy Gladding is with us. You know, he's found a source of new engineers and other people to take jobs in the broadcast industry. Not just broadcast, but content creation, radio and television, and podcasting too. Andy's got some great ideas. Chris Tarr does as well. So join us. We're coming up next on TWRTS.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by Max Connect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host for today at the Telos Alliance Studio in Nashville, Tennessee. It is a hot one, and I know everybody's been saying that for weeks now across the summer, across most of the U.S., but my goodness, here in on my rooftop, it's 97 degrees on a proper thermometer and 83 degrees in the office because the AC just isn't keeping up. Maybe you'd maybe Chris Tarr will tell us what it's like in Mukwonago if it's any cooler at all. But it's a hot one here, and we've got a hot topic today because I know we've been worried for years about where the next batch of engineers might be coming from, what kind of shortages we're going to have, and our guest is going to talk about that. But first, let's go to Mukwonago, Wisconsin, to see Chris Tarr. Hey, Chris, welcome in.
So just a couple of days ago, I was sitting with you in Nashville, and here I am back in Mukwonago. So to answer your question, 96 degrees here in my house. It's a comfortable 72 because I don't know, for some reason, up north, apparently they build the air conditioners a little bit better, you know, to handle the heat that we don't often have here. I don't know what the deal is down by you, but up here, you know, we can handle it. So yeah, it's, just got back from visiting Nashville, got to see you, and boy, what a beautiful place Nashville is. I really enjoyed my time down there.
Well, good. Well, I'm glad you did. And I understand you got to visit the Opryland Hotel and see something pretty cool in there, right?
Oh, yeah. I got a personal tour of the WSM studios. And Jason's got a really, really wonderful facility there. One of the biggest Axia consoles I've seen. That thing's huge. Oh, yeah, he ordered a big one, all right. And I guess they're going to be moving soon, so that should be exciting. In fact, he was like, you know, I want you to see it, you know, before we move, because you know, this will be history. So, I got a picture of me sitting in front of one of the microphones at WSM. That was very cool. So, yeah, one of the highlights of my trip was, and totally spontaneous, so that was fun, too. And I drove down and saw the tower and got some pictures of that as well.
The going to WSM, yeah. And by the way, I'm not sure where they're moving to. Did were you told, and can you say or not?
Yeah, it sounds like they're just moving to a different location on the campus somewhere.
I
don't recall exactly what he said, but it wasn't a huge move, but into maybe something a little bigger.
There was a plan afoot to move the studio and make it even more of a television capable studio. And they're going to move to an annex of an existing annex of the Ryman Auditorium, the mother church of country music, downtown Nashville. But they did the math, and apparently it's still better financially as a tourist cafe or gift shop or something, but they were going to put it there and have Circle TV. That's their TV brand that they right. often do shows for. So anyway, okay, well, good. Back years ago, Jason Cooper bought, I don't remember if it was five or it was maybe seven Axia consoles, and they had fiber across the Opryland campus, and they have X nodes over in the Grand Old Opry House, so they have, you know, linear audio running around, and it's amazing what they do there. They when they do something, they pretty much do it right, and you can tell when you go to the Grand Old Opry and hear the music in the auditorium there. the audio is just wonderful. We got good sound engineers in Nashville.
Yeah. And just again, just a really, really beautiful facility, you know, in a beautiful hotel. I kind of fell in love with Nashville while I was there. It really a little family vacation and we all loved it. We had just a great time and I had to break my rule. Yeah. I had never been, So it was really very cool it was a work trip, but I managed to stretch a couple of days and bring the family down and they all really enjoyed it too. But yeah, I kind of fell in love and I said, I had to break my rule about the radio stuff. I wasn't going to take a look at any, cause it's true that everywhere I go there, I know somebody. And they're always like, oh, you got to come by and I'll give you the tour. And, you know, so I'm like, this time I'm going in stealth and I'm not going to, you know, I won't bring any work related stuff here. And Amy was great. She's like, I know you really want to see it. Let's go take a look.
Oh, and, God, love her. That's awesome.
Yeah. But she actually found it pretty interesting, too. So it worked out okay.
Did y'all get to go to the Goo Goo Cluster store and make you some Goo Goos?
No, but I had a moon pie. Apparently that's a thing down there.
Well, those are made in Chattanooga, I believe.
Yeah, I had never had one. And we went to a barbecue restaurant. And at the end, she's like, well, would you like a moon pie? And I was like, what's that?
And of course I would.
Yeah, so I said, sure, okay, bring it on out. And yeah, so that was interesting. And murals, the murals all over the city are so cool. So cool. So yeah.
Did you have a picture made with angel wings behind you? Because, you know, you need angel
Amy
wings.
Did. Amy did. Yeah, she got the thing. She did the angel wings and went to this Daddy's Hot Dogs, which was a pretty impressive too.
Okay. I've never been there. Hey, let's not forget about our guest. He's here. And Chris, I'd love to hear about your travels. Here's another guy who's traveled a bunch, you know, in the last year, Andy Gladding. Andy, welcome back to the show. I'm so glad to see you.
Oh, I'm so glad to see you too, Kirk. You know, funny listening to Chris discuss his sort of radio blackout period while on a family vacation. Right before my wife and I got married, a couple of years ago, we went out to Berkeley. And I got a free tour of KPFA. So very excitedly, I said to Katie, ooh, the engineer says we can go up to the transmitter side on top of this beautiful mountain overlooking the Bay Area. So we go all the way up there and I meet the gentleman. And he's, you know, he's giving me a tour of the place. They've got a big 50,000 watt tube transmitter that they still, you know, use every once in a while for fun. I'm having the greatest time. So on the way back down the hill, I said, Katie, what did you think? What was your favorite part of the tour? And she goes, well, there was this really neat, nice bush outside the door that had these beautiful flowers on it that I had never seen before. I went, and that was the point I said, that's it. I can't do that tour anymore.
true story. You know, at WSM that, you know, my wife was like, she loved the wood paneling. That's all she kept. You know, I was looking at all these gadgets and everything. And she's like, that wood is, she was asking Jason all about it. You know, where'd you get that with all the colors and everything? It looks, that's so cool.
I love that.
Hey, Andy, at KPFA, did you see Michael Yoshida? Is that who you met there?
It might have been. That rings a bell. It was a couple of years ago. It was very, very cool. Beautiful facility. They even had a roof that in the studios, the roof opened up to the outside. I went, wow, I'm at the wrong place. We don't have that in my office.
Wow, I think I missed that part of the tour. Wow, that sounds neat. Well, Andy, you're here, and give us a little elevator speech. What are we talking about? Something about getting new engineering talent, and you found a ready pool.
Well, that's an interesting thing to bring up, Kirk. You know, I'm very fortunate that in addition to working at AM 970 and 570 in the city for Salem, New York, and they've been very supportive of my other job, which is working as the chief engineer for WRG, Radio Hofstra University. And it's a very nice symbiotic relationship because I realized a couple of years ago that a company like Salem that has radio stations all over the country is finding itself in the same place that a lot of other companies are finding, where they need young talent, not just going into on-air and into production and programming and all the fun stuff, but they also need people to do engineering. So my colleague John Mullen and I kind of put our heads together and we said, you know, one thing we do have at WRHU is we have a never-ending supply of young folks that come to the college radio station. So by process of elimination, and you know, it's kind of almost like every September and every January, we do like a little song and dance to try to see who's interested. And once we started explaining the opportunities that were available for young folks in engineering and kind of peeling back the curtain a little bit of the mystery of it, but saying that this can be fun and this can be an enjoyable thing, and also it can be profitable. That's what a lot of these students are worried about, is making money when they graduate. They've all got loans and bills to pay, and they want to move out of their parents' house. So once we framed it in that way, we found there was a very interested talent pool of young folks that were quite adventurous and willing to get under the hood with us to find out what was going on, what was making the machines hum. So that's kind of where we started, and it's been leading to some very interesting and unexpected places.
Well, I want to hear a lot more about that over the next 45 minutes or so. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Chris Tarr, and Andy Gladding is our guest. Also, maybe Andy can fill us in on some of his other travels. It seems like, don't answer now, Andy, but it seems like I saw you went to Japan or something, and that looked pretty interesting. So anyway, that's coming up. Our show This Week in Radio Tech, I always got to give this quick announcement about Nautel toward the beginning of our show. They're a wonderful sponsor, and you know Nautel really believes in supporting our industry. And of course, they want your business. They want you to buy transmitters from them. But at Nautel, they are experts in HD radio. And I'm glad they are, because I must say, although I've done a lot of audio processing for HD radio, especially when it was newer back in the early 2000s, I spent a lot of time with Omnia processors and helping people get set up on their main FM, their HD1, and maybe an HD2. I recently had the pleasure of putting an HD radio on for myself, for my new station in Oxford, Mississippi. And the folks at Nautel made this so easy to do. I thought it'd be a lot more complicated, but it actually turned out to be pretty easy. We actually already had a Nautel transmitter. We had a VS2.5, and it was 10 years old, but perfectly capable of transmitting the whole HD spectra. And what we had to do was disable the internal exciter that comes in our VS2.5 and add the FMHD exciter from Nautel. And then, because we had all of our program sources for the HD2 and the HD3 right there on site, we used their HD Multicast Plus box. This is an importer and exporter together in the same box. So it's the right thing to do. You give it AES EBU digital audio for your HD 1, 2, and 3, and it encodes those properly. And then spits out the whole spectra. Well, it spits out the E2X signal for the exciter, and the exciter puts all that together and then, you know, makes our frequency and puts it all together and sticks it over to the VS2.5. And it really turned out to be easy. The instructions were good. We got a little support from Nautel on a couple of things we didn't quite understand. And bam, we're on the air with HD. And when it was on the air, I thought, wow, that really wasn't very hard. And the fact that I got to use literally a 10-year-old Nautel VS2.5 transmitter just absolutely blew me away. In fact, I had repaired that transmitter years ago. It blew a PA module, I think, during a lightning storm. And there's even a video on YouTube of me replacing that. So Nautel, I want to thank you for making such quality gear and stuff that you could actually use a 10-year-old transmitter. Not every one of them, but that one certainly, to get yourself on the air with HD. Nautel Transmission Talk Tuesdays will return in a few weeks, whenever Jeff Welton gets back off the road, and we'll tell you about those coming up too. Thanks, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Chris Tarr is here, and Andy Gladding is here. Hey, Chris and Andy, you two are both involved with bringing people into the fold, helping educate them in broadcast engineering. And so I wonder, I know you both have things to contribute. Me, not as much. So first of all, Andy, I wonder if you might take us a bit more through the process of recruiting students at Hofstra or maybe other places. How do you have that conversation? How does it start to see if they're interested, or you may have to interest them in the topic of broadcast and engineering? Lead us through that.
Well, it's kind of interesting. It's a very process. In the beginning, it really just started from being around, being on site. You know, a lot of, as we all know, a lot of these engineering hours kind of take us through strange shifts and times that we're at our sites repairing things. And my shift at the college is traditionally in the afternoon and evening. So on certain days of the week, I'll be there at night. And what I found was, is that every once in a while, I'd be in my office working on something, you know, repairing something or experimenting. And I'd turn to my right and I'd see a little face at the door. And there'd be a quizzical young student looking to have a conversation. And sometimes it wasn't always about engineering. Sometimes it was just about life or just about being a college student. You know, I mean, I was a college student in that same office asking the same questions 20 years ago when I went to Hofstra. So I realized that this would happen every once in a while. And soon, after about a year or two, they brought friends. And one thing I found about college students, and this is universal to any place, young minds want to be kept occupied. So what I discovered was if they came and I didn't really have anything for them to dig into, they would stay for a little bit and then they'd wander off and go do something else. But if I had a project or I had something for them to get involved with, well, suddenly they kept coming back because they realized that they could learn something. This became even more accelerated after COVID. When the students returned to campus, we found ourselves with a population of young folks that had spent a couple of years kind of not interacting and sitting in their bedrooms. And really kind of their only interaction was with a computer. So what I was able to provide them with were things that were, in addition to computers, electronics and things that were hands-on tools. So what I discovered was that if you gave them the tools, you showed them how to do something, you handed them a multimeter, suddenly they got really excited about it. And they wanted to know more and more and more. And then they would bring more friends. So after a couple of weeks, I suddenly found myself with about 15 or 16 students. So a very nice young lady who has since graduated, now works at New York Public Radio, Shania Senchtok, Kirk, I know that you know very well. Shana decided to start organizing these students into what they called Tech Thursday. So what was a kind of informal just get together, now suddenly we had pizza and they put together a program schedule. And I realized that I had to up my game. So now every week, I'm putting together another presentation. What are we going to talk about this week? Well, now it became a formalized thing. This week, we're going to talk about processing. Next week, we're going to talk about, you know, what happens if you go off the air. The next week, we're going to talk about how to schedule automation and how to work on an automation system, how to build sound cards. And it became the kind of thing where they just kept coming back and coming back. And I realized that there was an interest in this. But without taking the time or recognizing that there is that interest or looking to generate something that will attract attention, it's not going to continue. So it's a lot of work for me. It's something that's not part of my job description, but I realize it's important and it's really yielded some pretty amazing and tremendous results. We're very excited about it at WRIQ.
Wow. I'm wondering, Chris, do you have any similar opportunities with a local university or college to draw students from, anything like that?
We do actually, you know, right down the road is Milwaukee School of Engineering. So we have in the past, our chapter, SBE chapter has reached out to them. And then on behalf of the SBE with the mentorship program, we've been reaching out to schools and presenting this as an opportunity for students who might be interested. So there's some outreach there. We don't really, you know, it's certainly not to the level that we're talking about here today, but there's certainly, they've got to come from somewhere. And one of the biggest issues we have is the people don't know that these jobs exist. They're good jobs. They're well-paying jobs. You can pretty much pick where you want to go and pretty much be able to make a living. So the issue is people don't understand that there's people behind the scenes, spinning the plates and, you know, keeping them spinning up in the air without them falling. So, you know, once people understand that those jobs exist, all of a sudden there is some interest because they start to play with the radio stuff and they get it in their blood like we all did. And you get some people who are very, you know, very, very interested. I've had three already mentees right out of college who are now working full time in the industry. They just had to play around with the gear for a few minutes and they instantly fell in love. So yeah, I think, the biggest part is letting people know those positions are out there and then getting them started and getting them a little bit of a taste of what, the job entails.
Andy, are you finding that students are attracted more toward the IT side of broadcasting, or are some people interested in pure audio or the RF side, or where are these people coming from with in terms of their interest?
Well, that's a very good question. What I've discovered is this is not a one size fits all thing that we can do. You have to take the student based on their face value. So you're going to have people that are going to be interested, but if they're not really electronics heavy or they're really not onto the math side of it, you can't push them into that hole because they're going to lose interest and they're going to leave. So one thing that really helps is because to answer your question, we get students from all over the place at WRHU. I mean, we have students that just want to do radio. We have TV students that want to do, be involved because they like the idea of production, but we also get students that have no interest in working in broadcasting. Now that doesn't mean that when they leave, they're not going to do it. Because I have students that come to me from the School of Earth Science. I have students that come to me from the journalism program. I have students that come from the theater club. And what I'll do is I'll say, look, I get that you might not want to do this end of the business. You might not be the person to sit behind a bench and you're going to fix power supplies. But you seem to be a really good writer. So we could really use somebody to help, document and publish marketing materials for what we're doing or events we have coming up or help coordinate the things that are coming up for our little technical cohort, or help be a better ambassador to the school and to the station to provide better recruitment opportunities. So what I find that we get students from all walks of life. And I had a young man come to me about 2 years ago. He walked into my office. He wanted to be a journalism major. And as he sat down, he said, "You know, what's your favorite antenna tower?" I said, "That's an unusual question." So we started talking about antennas. And wouldn't you know it, after spending a year or two with me, he's now taking over the position at WFIL. 20 years old. He's a chief engineer down in Philadelphia for Salem.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Now, I mean, you never know where they're going to come from.
So, wow. Kirk, you know, the other thing I wanted to point out is in our line of work now, almost everything is IT. And I've said this before, and I used to joke about it, but it's true now. You know, there's more Cat 5 copper in a transmitter building than RF plumbing now. So, yeah, one of the things that really interested one of my mentees who works with me at Magnum was HD, because HD radio at its very base is networking. He was really interested in how that worked and helped me put a couple of them on the air. And because of that, and because of the computers inside of transmitters and things, that really started to interest him as well. Because again, all of these things now are just, they're computers. And secondarily, because of that, because he's getting involved with the transmitters from the IT side, he's learning about, power supplies and power amplifiers and things like that. So I do think that there is a path for, people interested in IT to move into this position and actually be successful. Because, if you look at a modern plant now, as far as transmitters go, you could theoretically, in the right situation, just be swapping out modules. You don't really need to know a whole lot about, how the thing produces RF. Obviously, it's helpful and it's good to have somebody who can do that. But in a pinch, nowadays you don't necessarily need that if you've got somebody else on a contract basis that can handle that. Now, again, my mentee loves Axia audio over IP and it's just dove into that and learned all there is to know about it. So I think that, that's where that can come in is when you get those people interested. And I think in some cases, those are actually more important skills nowadays in broadcast engineering than the RF stuff, because you can always hire contract engineers for RF, but it's very hard to find people who are really skilled in broadcast networking, audio over IP, and those sorts of things.
Hey, wow, you have really opened the door here to our sponsor, Broadcast Bionics in the UK. And I'm going to take this opportunity to tell you about Bionics and their virtual rack product. By the way, you're watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech with Kirk Harnack, Chris Tarr, and our guest, Andy Gladding. And we were talking about, where our students, where our engineers coming from. Andy's bringing students and identifying people at Hofstra University with WHRU. And Broadcast Bionics is implementing technology that really will interest those who are interested in IT, but also its place in making broadcasting work. So let's take a look at Virtual Rack from Broadcast Bionics. You go to the website, bionics.co.uk, and you'll find out about the Virtual Rack. Now, you've heard me talk for some years now about virtualizing your broadcast infrastructure. And the trend, my employer, Telos Alliance, really started doing this with containerized software. Some people call it Docker containers because the Docker organization kind of came out with this model, if not first, at least in a big way. And Broadcast Bionics is taking that model of containerized broadcast infrastructure and making it super easy to implement. You actually don't have to have a degree in IT or a lot of any experience with Docker containers in order to make this work, but you are still dealing with IP addresses and IT. The virtual rack is you get the server. That's part of the deal. They have two different sizes of servers, like small and large, and they will each handle a certain number of what they call application units. If you want to implement, for example, a small audio console, that's a certain amount of application units, or a phone system, that may be more application units. And basically, you go into the virtual rack, and it's kind of like an app store. You choose the things that you want to install, like some Telos Alliance audio consoles or phone systems or audio processors, and you click on them, they install themselves. It creates the networking infrastructure inside the virtual rack. It does that for you. It enumerates things properly, and then it's up to you to go license those products that you've installed. Many products have some basic functionality without licensing, but you'll want to go to each manufacturer, get the license to make your product run, apply the license, and now you've got an audio console and a phone system and an audio processor. And there's more coming, like a profanity delay or audio codecs. WebRTC is even included with things like the Axia Altus console. And, you know, you can do this yourself. You can also hire people at Telos Alliance, for example, to install these things for you on your own bare metal servers, or you can get this virtual rack from Broadcast Bionics. Now, if you go to that webpage at the Bionics website, down at the bottom, and Suncast is showing you right now, there's a couple of videos at the bottom where Dan McQuillan describes how this works. Also, Dan did a Tort episode with us a couple of months ago where he describes in pretty good detail how virtual rack works and what a lot of the options are. So I would highly encourage you to, if you don't have a degree in computer science or networking, you can still do this using this amazing virtual rack from Broadcast Bionics. Check them out at bionics.co.uk or bionic.radio. Thanks so much to Broadcast Bionics for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. Oh, and if you're in the USA, for example, you can get this through your Broadcast Bionics dealers here in the USA, in the UK, and in most countries around the world where there's broadcast dealers, you can get this product. So check it out. Thanks a lot, Broadcast Bionics, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right, back to Andy Gladding and Chris Tarr. They are talking about where to get students. Andy, one thing I've noticed on Facebook, I'm a member of the Hey Audio Student group on Facebook. Man, there's a lot of people in there. Holy cow, thousands of people. So obviously, there are students interested in audio. And a certain percent of them, I'm sure, are interested in broadcast audio. Andy, what are some of the social networking platforms or places that you encourage people to go to find out about broadcasting?
Oh, I mean, well, besides the traditional models, I mean, unfortunately, my social media presence is very limited. My students and also my wife make fun of me all the time because she says I'm very old school. I tend to use Facebook for most everything, and I occasionally dabble in Instagram. But I find that the students have their own resource of places that they go to for connecting with each other, especially when it comes to networking and making those connections. I mean, they'll definitely use Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. They share a lot of TikTok videos that they find, and within those videos, there are chat and messaging features where they'll begin to direct message each other to establish relationships. So there's a variety of places that places they'll go and look. Another very popular information depository that I know my students use, they'll use MOOCs or, you know, open online courses. because there's, again, a significant amount of information that's being accredited and presented by people of authority. A lot of times schools have open MOOC courses. So I'll have a student come to me and say, hey, I just took a MOOC on the difference between alternating current and direct current. And then they'll have questions about it because they'll have their virtual instructor that will have spoken to them in sort of a broad manner. And then they have questions they'd like to drill down into the subject matter, might not be able to get the information they're looking for because there's so many people interacting with that online course. We're talking thousands of people tune into these things. So they'll come to me and say, hey, what do you think about this? Is this accurate? And I'll say, oh yeah, that's right. That could use a little refinement, but you got the right idea, that kind of stuff. So that's another great resource because, again, it's accredited information by most of the time by universities and by lecturers that know what they're talking about. So a lot of information there.
Chris Tarr, you and I got to check out Massive Open Online Courses, MOOC.org. Wow, I'm on the site now. What a resource. Engineering, data science, law, literature, math, medicine, music, philanthropy, physics, science. Holy cow, Chris. We could get smart.
That's right. Way smarter than I already am, which is not fair. So there you go.
That's a good resource, Andy. Thank you for that. I'm going to put that in the show notes. Wow. All right. So you mentioned Shayna Shemstock, one of your students, and now she's she's out working, right?
She's in New York Public Radio.
Yeah, she's been on our show before. She kind of seems like a superstar. Tell me another success story or two from your students. Where have they gone on to?
Well, again, before I was mentioning a very nice young man that I've just finished working with me at Salem, New York, and has now moved on to Philadelphia. His name is Cody Millar.
Right.
And I think he may be, I'm going to put it out there, he may be the youngest chief engineer in the U.S. right now because he's 20 years old and he's in charge of a massive two-station AM array, which he's, taken on a very big challenge here, and I give him a lot of credit. So he's definitely an example of somebody who came in, was interested, and we kind of launched him in the right direction, and he seems to be, making a lot of headway. We have a lot of different students that come through and have landed places. I had another student a couple of years ago by the name of John Sinelli, who, again, came to my office just to chat and had questions about engineering and about just being a college student, life. And within 2 years of graduating from Hofstra, he's now working as a maintenance engineer for WNBC TV. And his main post is Saturday Night Live. He's he does SNL. Couldn't believe it. He gave me a call a couple weeks ago and said, hey, Professor Gladding, you want to come to SNL? I'll give you a backstage tour. I went, of course, I would love to do that. So, I'm not going to say that I'm in it for the fringe benefits, but they're pretty nice when they work out,
That Chris, I kind of got interested in broadcasting for some fringe benefits, at least, a little bit of notoriety around high school, right? People would say, oh, I heard you on the radio last night. And then there's always access to the prize closet. Is that why you got in broadcasting, Chris?
Oh, absolutely. You should see the number of radio station t-shirts I have. I could keep myself clothed for years with just radio station t-shirts. There was that, and of course my CD collection is huge as well.
Yeah, I've heard. Yes. I was going to say, have you digitized all those, but they're already digitized. They're on CD. Have you moved them off of CD and onto some maybe more or less ephemeral media?
Well, here's the thing about radio station CDs. They're usually one hit wonders. So yeah. I just saw Suncast posted here that he has half a banner roll that he took home with him. There's that too, the banners. I still have banners in my garage from, jobs that I had 25 years ago. So, there's all those little fringe benefits. And of course, in engineering, you got to fight off the women. So there's that part of the benefit too. You become very attractive to the opposite sex.
I'll bet both of you can come up with stories, and I'll prime the pump here. When I was the chief engineer at WKQQ, a rock station in Lexington, Kentucky, they had a limo. It was a station limo. It used to be owned by the state of Kentucky. I think it drove the governor around, and the station bought it. And I came up with some lousy excuse to drive it home one weekend and drive my family around town. So Like, I had to check out the radio, make sure it was going to be, you know, good for the remote or something like that. So I drove the limo home and drove it all around Richmond, Kentucky with my family in it, waving at everybody. And, of course, it had the Double Q logo on the side. That was a nice fringe benefit. Occasionally get concert tickets, occasionally. What kind of fringe benefit, Andy, what kind of fringe benefits are you finding or are your students finding working in radio?
Well, I could tell you a fringe benefit that my wife discovered, and that you guys will be amazed at this. A couple of weeks ago, my wife's uncle gives the family a call and says, "Oh, I'm cleaning out my storage unit. Does anybody here want an authentic 1997 Wurlitzer jukebox, a CD playing jukebox?" So my wife, you know, goes, "Oh, that sounds like something that my husband would definitely want." So she says, "Yes, I don't know anything about this." And about a week later, she says, "Oh, by the way, my parents are coming over with the jukebox." So the first thing I said was, "Does it work?" She goes, "Oh yeah, my uncle plugged it in. Everything, it says it works fine." I still said to myself, "Oh boy." Sure enough, as I'm sure you guys can guess, the jukebox showed up, CD carousel turns. Does it play CDs? Absolutely not. So what does my wife say to me? "Well, you're a radio engineer. You can fix a jukebox, right?" I said, "You know, what comparison could I use from your job that you want to bring homework? I'd bring homework for you and give it to you to do." Of course, I kept my mouth shut. By the way, she might be watching. So, Katie, I love the jukebox. It's beautiful. And by the way, speaking of CDs, I got another 150 CDs to add to my collection of CDs I already have. So that's a fringe benefit my wife discovered.
That is the same thing here. And, you know, anytime there's a computer or a phone or anything around here that doesn't work, oh, yeah, I get pressed. And not only that, but, like, relatives know. And not only do they use me, but they offer me up to their friends. "Well, you know, my son's a broadcast engineer. He'd probably fix that for you." You know, so yeah, that is one of the fringe benefits to family members for sure.
I know, Kirk, it's not the question you asked, but I had to go there.
So, Andy, I got to hand it to you. And one of the things that I've noticed, and you know, the Tampa SBE chapter has Mr. Chavez there. He's been a guest on our show. Is that your involvement with Hofstra University, WHRU, and the and now at Salem, and helping students to find this profession and find something that they, you know, find a way to express what they kind of thought they wanted to do anyway. All right, that's it appears to me that's highly dependent on Andy Gladding driving that. If it weren't for you, I don't think you'd be seeing the success involved there. It doesn't happen naturally. It takes somebody with super enthusiasm to get that to go. And a lot of times it's a college professor like you've been in Tampa, Isaiah Chavez, who we've had on the show, kind of the same way with getting students there to come to the SBE meetings and discover, is there something here that turns you on, that you think you might see yourself doing? So Andy, I wonder if you could tell us about, you know, what you think SBE chapters or other people in engineering could do. It seems to take a personality like yours, somebody excited to make this happen for it to happen. Got any thoughts about that?
Sure. I mean, look, at the end of the day, I can't take credit for all this. It takes a village. It really does. I know it sounds a little cheesy, but at the same time, it's true. I would not be able to do all of these things without the support of the people that are involved in all the different organizations that come together to make this happen. Hofstra by itself, Salem by itself, the SBE by itself would not be seeing the success if everybody wasn't on board. At Hofstra, for example, the general manager of WRHU, John Mullen, has been very instrumental in helping to drive recruitment, because from his perspective, by getting students engaged and getting students interested, that's good for the college. You know, at the university level, we look for recruitment, retention, reputation. What's going to get the students in the college? What gets the students to stay at the college? What helps the reputation of the institution? Obviously, when the students graduate, you want them to say nice things about the college. They've found success. So John has been very instrumental driving that from his perch as the GM, and he's been providing the resources and opportunities that the students can then use, that I can then use to recruit and attract students into this sort of engineering subset. At the commercial level, the general manager of Salem, Jerry Crowley, has been very supportive of providing opportunities for college students, specifically Hofstra students, to come work for Salem, New York. So there's an opportunity that, okay, we develop them at the college station, we prime them, and then they have a place to go. The biggest thing is they need a path. Everybody, I think, that's 19, 20, 21 years old needs to see where they're going to be in 10 years. You know, they don't want to see it. No, none of us want to think about where we're going to be in 10 years. We want to live in the now. But for somebody who's going to owe money and have to repay student loans and have to think about having a job and moving out of their parents' house, these are very important things. Finally, where the SBE comes in, the SBE provides a tremendous networking opportunity. I mean, you've got the best of the best that are passionate. You've got the people that are sort of floating to the top, that show up to meetings, that are willing to dedicate their time, that sacrifice time. They could be at home with their families to help further the image of the career and the field professionally. So if you put those three things together, you've created a feeder system. Again, we desperately need a feeder system in this business because a lot of the suburban stations, the small market stations, just don't have those opportunities for young folks to get involved. So the college needs to pick up the slack there. And then a market cluster that can provide opportunities, entry-level positions for students to, again, come in and make mistakes. Nobody's going to get this right the first time. The expectation that, you know, if you're a market 1 through 20 or 1 through 25 station, you're going to hire employees that are flawless. It's just not going to happen anymore. You need to provide a little bit of a landing pad. So when the students make mistakes, they don't fire the commercial properly, they forget to load something, it's not the end of the world. We don't want to say that, but that's very important. And then finally, the professional networking and mentoring has to then continue past that entry-level point because the student, once they're in the position, they need to be surrounded by professionals they can look up to. They need role models. And they're going to need a lot of them. They're going to need people that can be their heroes. So my pitch to SBE members, you want to be somebody's hero. If you've been doing this for 35, 40 years, make a friend, make a young friend who you can pass along all of this knowledge and information to. You've spent all this time learning it. You know what to do. You have all the wisdom. Pass it along. That's the only way this works. It's the only way it works.
Chris, I want to follow up with a question for you. I think as engineers, I think a lot of us may not have, I don't know how to say this. We may not think that we're somebody that people would look up to, that students would look up to. And yet some do. And it's important, you know, to be that role model for people who are looking for someone to look up to guide them. And as a mentor, I'm sure you've experienced this. What advice could you give to other engineers to take on that role of being mentor worthy and realizing that they are?
Well, first of all, I touched on this earlier, the SBE mentorship program. I was the chairman of the committee for that for quite a while and helped launch the program. It's a good way to match engineers with not only young engineers in the field, but people who are even interested in getting involved. And it being a free program, it's really open to anybody. And anybody can be a mentor. It's not really, somebody who has, the depth of experience of 50, 60 years in the field or whatever. I'm a mentor. And yesterday, for example, I was on a call with one of my mentees and, it was really rewarding. It was a great phone call because we actually did do Zoom meetings, but it was a great call because, when I first started working with him, he was really insecure and he had a lot of questions about, how do I learn everything that's here? And, I just really don't know how to manage this. And this last time that I talked to him, he had a few successes. And all of a sudden, his whole attitude was different. It was like, I got this. Things are good. We were joking about some of the advice that I gave him. One of the pieces of advice that I gave him that he just loves is, we're not going to get any more off the air. And he said, I've used that a couple of times. instead of panicking, I stopped and I went, we're not going to get any more off the air than we are now. So I'm not going to panic. I'm going to solve the problem. So, I think that is, it's so important not only to pass the technical knowledge, but the personal knowledge as well. I work very closely. One of my mentees is actually the son of the group that the station group that I work for. And, he was great. He's like, if my son isn't, my son is a technical guy, he really wants to learn this. You don't have to take him on if it, just because he's my son. And if it doesn't work out, it's okay. But he's a great guy and very, very smart. And he is, as you mentioned, it sounds kind of weird for me to say it, but his dad has said it. I'm his hero. He just really looks up to what I do. And, you know, he's learned a lot and continues to learn and talks about how great it is that he has the opportunity to work with me and learn this stuff. And he's taught me some things. And we work really, really well together. So I think that is really kind of the most important thing is be that hero, be that person who, you know, not only has that technical knowledge and also, you know, a safe person to pass these questions along to, because, you know, people feel like they don't want to ask dumb questions or whatever, but my guys know there are no such things. You know, I mean, I had those same questions when I first started out. So, you know, being a safe person to bring those things to, but also, you know, aside from passing along the knowledge, passing along kind of the life skills to deal with the job, because it's a job unlike any other. So, you know, there's going to be things we were talking about yesterday, like, you know, how to deal with, you know, coworkers who have issues and, you know, what it's like, you know, you can't say, you know, the advice I said you was pointing to yesterday is, you know, our job isn't to ask why. Our job is to say, okay, we can do that. Or, you know, instead of saying, why do you want to do that? Say, well, what is the result you're trying to achieve and mm-hmm. work mm-hmm. through the problem that way. So, you know, those are kind of the things too, that you pass along is some of that wisdom and you know, as well as the technical skills. So I find it very rewarding. And my recommendation to anybody who's in engineering, who is watching this now, is get involved with the program. You know, they're always looking for new mentors and it's really not hard. It doesn't take a lot of time and you feel good when you see these guys, the sparks, you know, things start to click and you see the light bulb go on. And they come back and they talk about, you know, how they've learned so much. And one of the greatest feelings is I had one guy that really got to the point where he didn't need the program anymore. You know, he moved on and now he's a mentor. You know, so that's great. It's a great program.
Chris, I know you're a Green Bay Packer fan, and I don't know if you're much of a sports fan outside of that passion. I'm not a big sports guy. I do enjoy other people being enthusiastic about their sport, and I'll just sit right down with them and enjoy the game with them, but it's because of them. Andy, I don't know about you either, but some people do get involved in broadcasting because of sports, and that's where I want to take you right now with our sponsor, Henry Engineering, and their really handy box that every engineer ought to know about, and that's the Talent Pod 2. Now, by the way, it's not just for sports broadcasting, but that is a very typical use of the Talent Pod 2 from Henry Engineering. You do any remote broadcast, doing any one of them is a lot of work, and doing a sports remote with multiple announcers, well, that can be a hassle. It can be a disaster if you don't know what you're doing. You need to provide headphones for each announcer, and you need to mix return IFB or backhaul into the local headphone feed. And each announcer may want a different mix. Or you can put the IFB, or can you put the IFB in my right ear only? Some announcers don't want to hear IFB at all, or they may want more volume or less volume. This can all be a headache. And you end up with a maze of equipment and a rat's nest of wiring. Well, the Talent Pod 2 was specifically designed by Hank Landsberg to be your rescue. It is the easy and foolproof way to do remote broadcasts, including sports broadcasts. With Talent Pod 2, each announcer can control his own mic and headphones. If you need to mix local and return audio into your headphones, need a different mix for each announcer, need to give off-air cues to just the color guy or just the just the main play-by-play announcer, no problem. Talent Pod 2 does all of that without distribution amps and without complicated wiring. It is an amazing little box designed by Hank Landsberg, and it just works perfectly. It's exactly what you need to get the job done. And, you know, as we say, sports season is upon us now with high school and college football games really cranking up here. Basketball season will be here before you know it, and then we're back into baseball season early next spring. So the Talent Pod 2 is just a great thing for what you want to do to make your job easier and to make your broadcast go off even better. So please check it out from Henry Engineering, and you can get it from Broadcasters General Store. BGS, Broadcaster General Store, is on the web at bgs.cc, and you'll find all kinds of broadcast equipment there, including all of the devices from Henry Engineering. You'll find things from Angry Audio, from Axia, from Telos. And even if you're doing some television work, you'll find equipment and lighting and microphones to help, and even cameras and switching gear to help you do those things too. Broadcasters General Store, the website is bgs.cc, and they are really set up to answer the phone at 352-622-7700. Thank you so much, Broadcaster General Store, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. You're here with Kirk Harnack and Chris Tarr and Andy Gladding. We're all talking about where the next batch of engineers is coming from. Yeah, I may be wrong, but I'm excited that Andy, you, and people like Isaiah Chavez and Chris, you're finding, you know, some younger people. I know so many engineers who are in their late 50s, early, and even mid 60s, getting ready to retire. Are there engineers around who are in their 30s and 40s? There's a few, not too many though. I hope these 20-year-olds get cranked up really fast to take the place and get work done. They need a little different skill set than we've had over the last 40 years or so. Andy, what are some of your prospects and advice that you'd like to hand out about that?
Well, you know, we touched on it earlier, but the fact that everything is becoming IT-centric is an advantage, because you have a body of young talent, young students that are very computer savvy. They understand computers at a level that I think, you know, I consider myself a younger guy. I mean, they know things that I don't. So there's a level of comprehension and understanding for the functionality of machines. So that's definitely a positive. Another thing I find with the students who work with, they're very visual. You know, if you write things out or draw things out for them, they can make those connections. You know, I think, Chris, you brought up some of your mentees using Telos earlier. The Telos Axia stuff is a great launch point. This is going to sound like an infomercial for Telos, but and you're welcome, Frank Foti. But from a lot of the systems that I've been training the students on, they really take to Axia, because if they can understand an analog concept, you know, microphone goes here, speaker goes here, here's the box in the middle, well, you can draw that out and say, look, all you do is you stick a number on this end, you stick a number on that end, depending what you want that number to do, it's programmable. Well, they look at that and they say, I completely understand that. That's like the way I program blah, 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 the way I set this up, or the way I get involved in the Windows settings. It's very native to them. So we have to remember that they have a skill set that we might not be native to us. We're looking at it from the physical plant drilling down into a computer. They're looking at it from the computer, and now the computer breaks out into the physical plant. So that's a good way to kind of think of it, reverse that thinking.
You're absolutely right. In fact, I touched on earlier one of my mentees who's the who I work with, my coworker, and he's the one who figured out how to get Symbian to talk to Axia natively. And it was that same thing. He just looked at this and went, oh, this is simple. I mean, and I'm sitting there going, what? I never would have thought of that. But it's just all natural to him. And he also is a visual learner. And so when he and I go to work on a project, I'll break out, you know, Visio or click charts or whatever, and I'll diagram it out. And that's, you're right. He's a very visual learner. And he looks at that and says, oh, yeah, that's no problem. And you're, you know, again, with Axia, that whole numbering scheme and A goes to B, and, you know, he's figuring out things ahead of me. You know, I'll start to talk about where I think we need to go, and he's five steps ahead when it comes to that, because that's, you know, that's how they think. They were raised on computers and they were raised on programming, and so all of this stuff comes really naturally to them. And you know, I mean, I'm a computer guy. I mean, I'm you know, I'm 53. I got started in the 80s with computers, actually late 70s, and still, you know, he a lot of times beats me to the punch with this. So I think you're right. They're very visual learners, and I think they're very quick to pick up on the IT aspects of this job.
And boy, we keep talking about IT skills, and man, more and more and more of our things are IT centric. I mean, so many, there's even microphones and speakers now that actually plug into AOIP networks. I just built this station in Oxford, Mississippi, where, I mean, almost everything is IT. I can access virtually everything. I was working with a phone problem actually in Greenville, Mississippi from my desk yesterday. And just to prove if it was a piece of equipment or not, I installed a piece of software. In fact, I installed BroadcastBonics X-Screen software to see, is there a problem with our VSET or a problem with the network, or what could it be? And I think we got it proved out. So, students with IT skills. Go ahead.
And Kirk, I think too, I think you're going to see the paradigm change a little bit in engineering, where you're going to find fewer people doing pure RF, but they're going to kind of be regional guns for hire to handle the pure RF things. So you're going to find really the engineering people are going to be a lot more IT studio engineer, HD. And when it comes to antennas and towers and that sort of thing, that'll all start to kind of be handled by consultants. I really see that is probably going to be the future of this business.
Chris and Andy, earlier this week, Chris, you and I were at the Tennessee Association of Broadcasters along with the SB Ennis workshop, and I met a TV general manager. She's from the Chattanooga market, and she said, all of the engineers, or most of them anyway, are getting very close to retirement age, the TV engineers in our market. She said, I would be interested in working with the other TV station managers to help some engineers form maybe a contract engineering firm that would be pretty much dedicated to Chattanooga TV stations. We'd certainly provide them with enough business, but I don't know that we need a full-time engineer, but we sure need people on call a lot or for projects. And I wonder if you think that this might be a model that you might have. I know we have contract engineering firms now, Josh Bone with Max Connect. That's one of them. They serve a lot of different markets, but do you think we'd find more market centric contract engineering firms that would take care of a whole bunch of stations? Not that we don't already have that now, but do you see more of that?
Well, one interesting thing that I noticed, I've been on both sides of the coin. So I've done, mm-hmm. Work for contractor integrator, and I've done work as the resident chief engineer. And there's a balance there, because when you can bring people in from the outside, you're definitely looking at saving money. And you have an availability situation that you can get 24-hour coverage if the company you're working with has enough folks on staff. And if everybody's pooling their resources, you're going to have somebody picking up the phone that can come to you. At the same time, and I'm sure you guys can agree, there's a lot to be said about natively knowing the plant you're working in. Because you're going to know where all the booby traps are. And that's going to save, the next person a lot of time. One of the things I always say to the people I'm training, I say, when you take the extra 5 minutes to fix something, label something, do it properly, you're not doing it for you. You're doing it for the person that has to fix it after you're gone. So I almost like a courtesy. You need to make sure you extend that courtesy to the person coming after you. So I agree. I think a blend of people that understand the facility they're working on, augmented by contractors, and if you can have that same group sort of, there's an opportunity to have people be able to do both. I think that there's the woman from the Chattanooga TV station has a lot of wisdom there. There's a lot of purpose to that for sure.
Yeah, I definitely think you want to have somebody still, with the individual stations, because I've found in my past working with contract engineers is, they don't have as much skin in the game as I do. So, that's where you sometimes find some sloppiness in the work or, and not intentionally, but, they're running around doing 800 things and they just don't have the skin in the game of, well, if I don't do this well, that's my career. And so, and that's not to say they're all like that, or even most are like that, or even that it's a malicious thing. It's just the realization of, it's not their job necessarily to focus on those details. Their job is to do a job and move on. So I do think you really still need to have somebody on the ground that's your representative that has skin in the game.
Now there's an interesting maybe twist on that, and I totally agree with you, Chris. But what if you had a contract engineering firm that did take care of all or most of the TV stations in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and you did take the care to do something right, fix it, label it, make sure it was documented for the next person, because that next person is either going to be you or somebody who works with you or for you because they're on your contract engineering team. That might be a mental reason to do it well, do it right. And maybe the advocate for the individual broadcasting station or station group or company is, their regional or national director of engineering who might stop in from time to time.
Sure. Just a thought. I've worked with I mean, I've worked with just, you know, Josh Bond is a great example of that, of groups that are just, you know, really, really, really good contract engineering groups. And I've worked with some that are really not very good. So, you know, each, you know, we're all human. So, you know, would that group of people in Chattanooga do a great job? Very well could. But there's just, you know, they're, you know, with the bones buried and, you know, where the skeletons are in the closet and all that kind of stuff, you really, I think, do need somebody exclusively to that station, at least to manage that. You know, I know of a guy who, is working for a big group who most of his job is managing contract engineers. In fact, a good chunk of what I do is manage contract engineers. And the reason we do that is because, you know, we have certain standards and I need to make sure that they meet those standards and to ensure continuity from site to site to site and job to job to job. So I still think, you know, that's where, you know, I have my skin in the game is if I don't hold them to that standard and things slip, that's on me. And so, you know, I have an incentive to make sure that this stuff is done correctly. And to our standards and to some of the policies that we have that may not be the same policies as the next group. So, so there you go. I think that is, you know, that's kind of the key to all this. I think having some sort of combination is what works best.
Andy Gladding, you got 2 minutes. We're going to put you on the spot in 2 minutes for a tip of the week. And that's coming right up. It's This Week in Radio Tech with Kirk and Chris and Andy Gladding. We're going to take a quick break and tell you about a couple more people who make the show possible. And we thank them so much for it. And one of them is Angry Audio. Chris, I was just over at Angry Audio yesterday. I stopped by and saw Catfish, Mike Dosh, because yesterday was his birthday. And I went right in there and I handed him a birthday card. And yes, I know it's corny, but I sang him happy birthday. So there you go. I got a look at that Rave console that he's got, but maybe you've got something you want to tell us about from Angry Audio.
Actually, that's part of what I want to tell you about. So I got an interesting phone call the other day. There's an old radio friend of mine who works for a wealth management company now, big one in Milwaukee. And they do podcasting and they do a live radio show on the big 50 kilowatt AM in Milwaukee. And they're building they have a new building that they're moving into and they want to build a new little broadcast facility. And they came to me and they said, so, you know, what do we do? Here are some of the things that, you know, we want to accomplish. And I said, you know what? I know exactly what you need. It's the Rave console from Angry Audio. And I explained why that console would work really well for them. Interfaces with the computer, has automatic mix minus, has enough inputs for everything they want to do. It functions like a radio console because this was a radio guy and he was using a production console. And he said, you know, it's just so hard in the heat of the moment to, you know, when you're so used to having faders and buttons and, you know, not all these knobs and those sorts of things, it's really hard to get that into your workflow. So I really want to move to something that is a lot more broadcast oriented. So I was telling about this new Rave console that's coming out and he went online while we were talking and looked it up. And he said, you know what? That's exactly what we need. I am so excited about this console. I think this is going to be perfect for what we need. So then I said, well, you think that's great. Let me tell you a little bit more about some of the other things they have. You're going to have four guest mic positions. How are they going to control the microphones? How are they going to control the headphones? They have gadgets for that. You know, we're looking at doing almost the entire studio just with Angry Audio equipment. Why? Because it's built well, it's inexpensive, and it's easy to use. And they solve all of the problems and all of the little wiring gadgets that we would have to deal with. All of those issues are gone. I'm not having to wire in specific little relays and on-off switches and little, you know, extra boxes and things like that. With Angry Audio, you get the whole package. You can take an Angry Audio console with the gadgets for the mics and the headphones, even mic processing. You know, he was talking about, well, you know, maybe we get this mic processor or that mic processor. And I said, you know what? I know what kind of mics you have. They have an audio processor for that. We can put that in the rack and that interfaces really well. You know, everything is Studio Hub. We order you some Studio Hub connectors, get you some Cat 6 cable and, you know, all your studio wiring is going to be nice and clean. There's no wires and adapters laying all over the place. So they are so excited about how their new studio is going to look and perform. And it's all because of Angry Audio. It's all thanks to the Angry Audio equipment that Catfish and his crew has designed. Check them out online, angryaudio.com. Check your favorite broadcast vendor. If you have a problem, Angry Audio likely has the solution, because problems disappear when you get angry. So take a look at Angry Audio today, angryaudio.com, whether you're looking for processing or studio equipment or anything along those lines. AngryAudio.com has you covered.
And some of their gear is so easy to install, you can do it yourself. But if you can't do it yourself, or if you've got some gear that's really tough to install, or you just don't have time to do it, here's who you want to call. And that's Max Connect Group. Max, M-A-X-X-K-O-N-N-E-C-T, because, you know, the internet. And all the names are taken if they're spelled right. But here's something Max Connect Group has that's new. And in fact, it's actually, well, this is cool. The Max Connect Broadcast U.192 MPX USB sound card. What is that? Well, they announced this at NAB. And this sound card is a USB going in. And one of the outputs, actually, there's two composite outputs, is composite. So it takes a USB, the 192 kilohertz sampled audio coming from something like a stereo tool or perhaps an Omnia SST processor, you know, typically a software-based FM processor. And it will turn that for you into the composite output that you need. Now, some people have done this, of course, with sound cards that are supposedly 192 kilohertz sampling. And I got to tell you, sometimes it works, and there's plenty of models that don't work that you think would work. It's not an easy task, and not all the chipsets are designed to do that properly. Well, this is designed to do it properly. That's taking the USB output, the high sample rate output from a USB connector of a software FM audio processor, and giving you hardware MPX to go into your analog STL or your analog FM exciter. So it does even more than that. It'll give you analog outputs or composite outputs, and you can also go in digital in with AES EBU or digital out, even analog in. So it's the Max Connect U.182 USB interface. If you love software audio processors, this is what you need to make that software audio processor work well, work very well. Max Connect Broadcast has it. Go to maxconnect.com/U192. And we'll have a link for that in the show notes. Thanks a lot, Max Connect, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack, Chris Tarr, Andy Gladding is here just for another minute or two. Andy, you're on the spot, buddy. Got a tip of the week for us?
Sure. Well, two tips of the week. First of all, okay. The first thing I would say is, you know, we were talking about presentations before. And mm-hmm. exciting young people. Shameless plug, SB15 will be having the Ennis workshop, New York City Ennis workshop, on October 21st. And we have a pretty fantastic keynote speaker lined up. I am not allowed to say yet who it is, but I spoke with this gentleman last night, and he looks like he's going to be coming down and addressing the crowd. So you're going to want to get in on this early, because we do have limited space. Just shameless plug, not my tip. Or I guess that could be a tip. Come, because it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be doing broadcast stuff, and also you have a chance to meet some of the WRHU students. But I wanted to just talk about presentations. You know, a lot of times, and I found this while we're kind of thinking about setting up what we want to do for this Ennis on October 21st. You know, we have presentations, obviously, that engineers such as ourselves would be very interested. We want to dive down into really technical stuff, and we want to learn about resistance of wire. We want to learn about how different processing works at the baseband level and stuff like that. But then when you're programming for a broader audience, sometimes you need a little star power. And one of the things I found is, and I heard this from a very good friend of mine, is when you want to get lecturers, you want to get inspiring people, find the most interesting people that you can find that are in the subject area that you want to teach. Over the last year, for example, I found myself teaching an audio class at Hofstra University. Never taught an audio class before. I said, how am I going to do 15 weeks of this? I got maybe enough for 2 hours here, you know, that I can draw on without having to do any research. Well, I called on a couple of friends of mine, and I brought an engineer in by the name of Bill Schnee, who's produced about 50 number one hits. Kirk, he lives down in Tennessee, down your guys' neck of the woods. And he's over in Franklin. And he came in, and he brought with him 50 years of knowledge entertaining stories about musical acts that you guys would know, that I would know, like Huey Lewis in the News and Whitney Houston and Michael Jackson. So a guy like him comes in and the class is on the edge of their seat the entire time. So sometimes the presentation is inside of the entertainment. And I say with anybody who's a, who's an expert, that's also entertaining, that's the person you want to bring in for your conveyance of knowledge. So pro tip for anybody who wants to get, you know, get, attract the attention from those that might not be super in or super deep with the technology, put a nice face on the front of it. If you build it, they will come. That's my pro tip of the week.
That's a good one. Good, good, good. Chris Tarr, got anything for us for a tip of the week to leave us with?
Hey. I wish I had brought it with me to show, but I used it earlier this week and it just reminded me how handy it is. I have a USB tester and it's a little USB dongle with a screen on it. And it will tell you if, you know, the USB port that you're jacked into is capable of high current charging. It'll take a look and check for functionality. You can add something on the other side to see current draw. You can measure PoE with it, all kinds of stuff. And it, you know, they're really not expensive. They're under $100, but it is a great tool for checking, you know, if you have a USB port that isn't functioning the way you expect it to. This is a great little test tool to just see what's going on with that port. If it's, you know, USB 1, 2, 3, whatever, it'll tell you all the data. And then again, when you plug something in, it'll tell you data flow, current draw, all those sorts of things. So you can test cables with it, all kinds of stuff. So you can get them on Amazon under $100. Get one for your toolbox. You'll be really, really happy you did when you need it.
You know, I do see the really cheapo ones that just tell you voltage and current draw. And I've had one of those for some years, but you're talking about ones that tell you more than that. I see one from Klein Tools for about $40. If there's something really cool you want to let me know about, why don't you... here's a USB power meter from Klein Tools. Maybe you can send me a link to the one you're talking about.
Sure.
Okay. I'll put in the show notes. I'd like to see that. I want to get the right one. Chris, thank you very much. Good tips all the way around. Andy Gladding. Oh, by the way, Andy, you were honored as Engineer of the Year, weren't you, by your SBE chapter in June?
I sure was. And it was an honor I was not expecting, and I'm overly flattered to be recognized amongst such a group of really, really, really prestigious engineering folks. As they say, I'm not worthy, but I'm happy to be named.
Well, good. Well, glad you were, and we think you're worthy. And thank you for being our guest here on the show. Thank you for finding a place to stop, get some good signal, and join us. I really appreciate it. And Chris Tarr, thank you for joining us as well. Good to see you this week, and glad you made it home safely. Hey, thanks to Suncast for engineering this show. I got to tell you, I was going to bring up during the show, Suncast has found a great niche in broadcasting, and that is, doing show production. And it takes a certain, you know, skill to switch a show switch the scenes at the right time to have the right scenes ready. And this is a skill that I tried it of my hand a little bit myself, but it's really good to have a professional like Suncast on. And I think that's a direction that students can look at as well. If you want to put your creative talents to use, look at, you know, directing live TV shows, TD, technical directing. Hey, we got to go. We're going to be back next week with another great show, and we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.